darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again, because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping. And the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence.
Welcome to Vassals of Kingsgrave. Joining us for our 15th episode of our linear reread through Song of Ice and Fire, today we will be covering January 22nd of 299 through January 26th of 299. It's a short period, but it closes out the book. We've finally made it. I'm your host for today, Adam, also known as Drowned Snow on the podcast of Ice and Fire Forums, and I am joined today by...
Brett, White Raven on the Forums.
Matt Varley on the forums.
Tanya Silence on the forums.
So Patrick the Toll on the forums. Patrick in real life.
Hello everyone, this is Nadia. Nadia on the forums.
Jack, it rhymes with sleek on the forums.
Claire, Dark Sister 24 on the forums.
And Steve on the forums.
Okay, so let's start with you, Claire. Tell us a little bit about yourself, how you found us, and how you got into Song of Ice and Fire.
I got into the show first, and I think this is during the break between season 2 and season 3, and I kind of binge watched everything during the summer, got all my friends into it, and then I think I found you guys on YouTube actually. And then I just kind of binge watched everything that you guys had on
Another
your YouTube page.
YouTuber.
Yeah, YouTube.
A lot of YouTube people lately.
Yeah. And so then.
What attracted what? You to, the, to us through the? What was it on the YouTube that attracted you to what to
were we just,
our podcast?
Were we just some recommended video?
Or was it Patrick?
I genuinely don't even remember how, like, I first clicked on the video, but I did. And then I just think a lot of the things that you guys talked about and a lot of the things that you pointed out, like, there were things that I had, like, just been like, oh, my gosh, I saw that. Yeah. Moon so, and then it kind of yeah. got me to read. I found your WordPress website, and then I listened to everything that you guys had on there. So, yeah.
And who's your favorite character?
In the beginning, mainly because of the show, it was Danny, I think. And then I kind of realized how annoying she was. And then it just became Arya. Because I'd like to imagine that that's how I would handle a situation. Just, you know, become an assassin. Kill everyone.
You would prefer to become a sociopath instead of a...
I'm that type of person, like, I will watch a TV show and, like, I will get really worked up and be like, I'm killing everybody. Like, I know this isn't real life, but, like, if I could just get my hands on you, I would kill you.
Yeah. So, yeah, let's maybe not meet when you're in London next time.
It's only if I don't like the person, so.
All right.
Excellent. So, and our other newcomer, Jack, just tell us a little about yourself. You've been on a couple VOKs this week, but it's your first time here on the reread.
Yeah, I had a friend give me the first Game of Thrones book, and I read it in about one sitting, and I loved it. And then right after that, I got a couple brain injuries, and I couldn't read for years because my eyes wouldn't focus properly. So I listened to Roy Dotrice read the books for me, and I finished them in about, I don't know, maybe 4 months, even though they're like 48-hour audiobooks. And then I was on YouTube just watching some videos, I think probably Preston Jacobs, and it must have linked to one of your videos, because I remember the very first one that I saw was the Linear Reread Part 1, and I just got hooked. And I went to your site and the forums, and I watched a whole bunch of the podcast of Ice and Fire and a whole bunch of VOKs, and it was pretty good.
Awesome. I think the takeaway here is that, Roy Dotrice, that's the way to go, right, guys?
Yeah, yeah, I listened to him.
Oh, P-Tire.
Yeah, it's I listened
to him. P-Tire.
No, we love the audiobooks. Who's your favorite character, Jack?
Oh, boy. You know, I really like Fagon.
Oh, nice.
He's pretty cool. I actually really, really like Stannis, too. I want to see one of them on the throne, because they're the only two people that actually seem to give a crap about the people, and not just themselves.
So is that the first we've heard that? Fagon, I mean? Is that the first,
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
one of the
first. Trendsetter.
No, that's been a thing for a while.
Who's your favorite podcaster, then? Who's your favorite podcaster? Is it me?
It's Patrick, right? You don't have to say White Raven. Just say Patrick.
Yeah, good. You just say Patrick. You don't have to say White Raven. I mean, just to make you don't have to inflate his ego even more. So just inflate my ego instead.
Actually, I think of all of the people, you know, White Raven's Moon Dragons thing definitely got me into it pretty well. But I just got to say, Bina's voice, goddamn,
it's like the
perfect podcasting voice.
Yeah.
All right, I've been muted this whole time.
Hey, oh, well. I can tell because I hear all the birds that are around you right now.
Yeah.
Welcome, Varley's birds. Okay.
Sounds like he's in high garden.
Awesome. So, I'm assuming that you had a lot of really insightful things to say, Matt, and we all react to them appropriately in another universe, and we can all move
right.
on.
Probably said beavers a lot.
Beavers.
No, I just thought Fagon was interesting.
Yeah, it's an interesting choice for sure. So
that's
I
all.
Know. Yeah, he'll die soon.
Right, let's roll.
It's all right. He'll be dead.
Yeah.
So let's get into this.
No.
Okay. So we've got. Let's see. Our first chapter here is Dany 9, the second to last chapter, and where we find. Dany having her fever dream, and she wakes up to basically a different world. So, I believe
a whole new world.
Don't do that.
Oh, boy. I believe Claire has a recap for us on that.
Yeah. So, Dany dreams of walking down the long hall of stone with a red door at the end. She has visions of being held by Khal Drogo in the Dothraki Sea, and Ser Jorah continuously popping up saying Rhaegar was the last dragon. I think the most disturbing thing is Viserys popping up and attacking her whilst being killed, and then his hands turning into snakes that bite her nipples. She sees visions of previous kings and begins to kind of... I kind of saw it as her breaking out of her skin and flying. She wakes up and all she wants to do is cuddle some dragon eggs. She asks if Drogo is alive and her servants just say he lives. But when she asks about her son, everyone's really afraid to tell her what happened, which is that he's dead. But, Miriam Azdur just kind of blurts out without any hesitation with a really gruesome description of his deformed body. Meanwhile, while this is all happening, Dany notices that the dragon eggs feel hot to the touch, but nobody else notices. Dany comes to the conclusion that although he didn't mean to, Ser Jorah ultimately killed her son by taking her into the tent. Miriam Azdur finally reveals that this was kind of her plan all along, and that even though Dany technically saved her, she was basically kind of saw herself as dead already since the people she knew were killed, and that she had been raped numerous times by other riders before Dany even noticed her. Then we have Dany realizing that although Drogo is technically alive, he is basically kind of brain dead, and asks Miriam Azdur when he'll be normal again, which this is where we get the famous quote. And then Dany tries to kind of arouse Drogo, but realizes that he's never really coming back, and then she suffocates him.
This is a great, fun chapter, is it not?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So I think we get some graphic stuff in the dream there, which is really creepy. And then, when we wake up, we see Miriam Azdur for kind of what she really is. and we kind of hate her, but at the same time, and I think, like, Bina points out in the notes here, like, she makes kind of a convincing argument of the stallion that mounts the world, fuck that guy, he's just gonna do more than that. she's bad in a way, because we know Danny is good and, like, not intending all this stuff, but she's also kind of part of that whole system of what Drogo's men were doing, so it's hard to completely hate her, but yeah, I don't know. What do we think?
I love her line, like, look at your Carl and see what life is worth when everything else is gone. That is, like, the best line from her to me. She's like, I gave you life, and she's like, what is life when everything else is gone? It doesn't matter. That's what you get right there.
Right.
And that's perfect.
You're living, you're breathing, but nothing else. Right. It's great.
I think when I read this bit, it just reminded me of, I think she mentions it as well, when Danny asks about the slave girl that she saved, and then we kind of find out that, you saved her, but her fate now is just kind of worse than it was before. Yeah.
You saved her, and now she's been passed around to 20 different men and, like, ritually killed. Like, ugh.
Do you guys think Danny will make good on her promise that Mago and Code Joko, Jacko, or whatever, will die screaming?
Let's hope so.
I completely forgot about them, so...
Yeah.
Well, she just met a Khalasar with her dragon in the middle of the Dothraki Sea, so...
Just met, you mean 5 years ago?
Yeah.
Oh god, it was 5 years ago.
The most recent thing that we know of her.
Yeah.
When a novel hasn't been published, time stands still, Matt.
Yeah. I think this chapter really shows off kind of like the House of the Undying, like George's like horror writing ability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think this was the main chapter that actually I kind of began to really like Danny again. Because, like, just the way she describes things, and she, like, the love that she has for Drogo, even though, I don't know, she technically just met him, like, what, like, a couple months ago or whatever, but, like, she still just really cares about him, and the way that she kind of kills him in a way, like, it gave me feels. So.
It's been more than a year, because, I mean, she took a pregnancy almost to the end, so it's been a while.
It's enough to be heartbreaking. I mean, she took this guy who, I mean, this was basically a business relationship, and she kind of taught him how to love in, you know, kind of a stereotypical way, right, you know? And then when she recalls, like, you know, how, you know, when they conceived their child, you know, on, you know, with the whole Khalasar around them and all this stuff, and she's just, everything's, like, very romantic and beautiful, and it's like, and, you know, and then she suffocates him, and it's like, it's so heartbreaking.
I wanted to talk about how she killed him, because I had never noticed this in any of my reading before, but do you think that might be the parallel to Azor Ahai killing Nissa? Because she kills Drogo to make the dragons.
Oh, that's interesting.
Unintentional, yeah. Maybe, yeah.
So maybe the dragons are Lightbringer, and Drogo is her love.
Maybe it was like her emotional state kind of put her in tune, and, you know, she felt the eggs were hot and all that, and, you know, there's some sort of, maybe it's just like some old magic that, you know, Valyrians knew that would have brought these eggs out, and somehow she just
happened.
Not the
old magic, the comet's back.
Yeah.
I don't really know if that's much of a sacrifice at that point, though, because he is pretty much gone already anyway, right? Well, so it's not like...
But, like, for as far as, like, magical elements, we don't know how magic works in this world, really, but what if it just happens to be she combined a few things by chance, you know?
Well, and the eggs only are mentioned as getting really hot after Drogo gets vegified.
Are they? I thought she felt them as warm when she woke up.
It's when she wakes up, and he. Well,
they're warm to her touch, but Jara can't feel it. He says they're cold stone.
Yeah. Right, it's a personal thing. But after she wakes up is after Drogo's already been.
He's already been vegified. Well,
oh yeah, vegified. Yeah.
So I'm saying that instead of Drogo literally dying, being the killing of her love, it was the way that she described it, that Drogo's not really living.
Oh, and it was the initial thing that Mir Mazdor did. You mean?
Yeah, and that's what woke up the dragons, which are Lightbringer. That's my
theory. I don't know. I think, you're allowed to have your theory, but I think it's...
How generous of you.
Thank you.
Well, I am generous at sometimes. But
you said he was your favorite podcaster.
If you send Patrick $20, you can think anything you want.
Yeah. Then I will gladly let you think whatever you want. But back to the point. The point is, as we've read in World of Ice and Fire, a lot of the Targaryen children got eggs in their cribs so that they could connect to it, to the egg. And it wouldn't hatch unless it kind of, you know, was with them for a while. So I'm kind of thinking that she, while she had him on her trip, she didn't really awake as a Targaryen before, like, right then when she was exposed to the ritual and whatever. And that's essentially what connected her to the eggs, that sparked the connection to the eggs, which then put up the situation where she then sacrificed a person to get them to hatch, essentially.
I think she got the last bit in there.
She mentions, though, earlier in the books, having a lot of connection with the eggs. She gradually gets more and more obsessed with them, but she doesn't feel them getting warm until after the shadow dancing thing.
Yeah, but right, she puts them in a brazier at some point, right?
Right,
yeah,
it doesn't work.
It doesn't work because she's not, she doesn't have the connection. The bond has not formed completely yet. It's a long time before dragonlings hatch from when they put in the crib, right? So I'm just thinking it might just be that she finally forged the connection to the eggs mentally or whatever.
Psychically. I think some of it has to do with the comet.
That too.
Yeah, I mean, you guys can think whatever you want, but it's all about the king's blood, baby. Danny's got three eggs, and she's been present with the eggs for the death of three Khals.
Yes.
What?
That's true.
Yeah.
Are you talking about the one that he killed?
Yeah. Drogo kills two Khals, and then she kills Drogo, so that's three dead Khals, three dragon's eggs. Bam. There you go.
And she stole them in the blood.
But before that, wouldn't the eggs then have reacted to the other Khals? I mean, one of the eggs might have started hatching before that. I mean,
I don't think it actually had anything to do with those two other Khals.
Yeah, Patrick, stop being ignorant.
She's actually
Patrick,
don't. Four kings died.
Don't save Viserys. Don't save Viserys.
Oh boy,
Viserys.
Although he died too, and he should have king's blood.
Yeah.
Oh, unless come you on. Think he's a bastard. He was no true dragon, let's be honest.
No, but he was still a royal blood.
The king's blood is so nebulous, right? Because it's like, who has it, who doesn't? Like, someone just calls themselves a king, and they're not really recognized. Oh, and now they have king's blood. Like, I don't know. There's the rules on that are a little sketchy.
Unless it's, and I don't know how we would get confirmation of this, but it could be a sort of world-building thing in the background. Like, king's blood could be a real thing that isn't actually related to being king. It could be certain family lineages, but how's the reader ever going to find that out?
Like, it's Targ blood, not king's blood, and that's why it works with Stannis?
Yeah.
I thought it was.
Yeah.
Aerys described it as power is just wherever people think power is.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the shadow on the wall.
I was about to say that, because we talked about this before with the horse. I mean, what was the reason why she wanted to sacrifice the horse? Maybe it's because the horse has a higher meaning in this society, in the Khalasar, than it would anywhere else. So it actually might have some potency here, because so many people revere the horse in the Khalasar. So that's essentially what I'm thinking, that if a person is proclaimed king and a lot of people believe that he is a king, then he would have king's blood in the sense that it gets special powers because of their belief.
The belief helps create the power. That makes sense.
Is the king's horse the king of horses?
No, that's Shadowfax. Anyway.
True story.
All right, so do we have anything else to say about this chapter, or do we want to move on to the next Danny chapter?
I had noticed when Miri is talking to Danny and Jorah in the tent, she's talking about, you know, you went into the tent, no living man should go and feed her baby to the darkness. He knew it too, And then she says, the shadows have touched you too, Ser Jorah, she told him. Like when she's talking about the shadows touched the baby, the shadows touched him too, and I thought,
maybe this is George's horror writing coming through in here, but it felt like something was up with Jorah in that scene. Like maybe back when this was planned as a trilogy, this was going to go somewhere. Danny describes Jorah's hands as being like strangely translucent in that same scene, that the shadows have touched him and like, you know, some sort of spooky mumbo jumbo going on about Jorah, but we don't see it go anywhere over the next four books. Did anybody else catch that?
Yeah.
I just assumed he went pale.
Well, he's hurt. He like, lost a lot of blood.
Yeah, he is real hurt right now, too.
His leg takes a while to heal.
Hmm. Right? But she's been asleep for a long time.
She sees him sort of fade away, which is very creepy.
Yeah. How do you guys think this Khalasar is surviving? Like, she said she was asleep for a long time.
She was up for a while.
And it's not like they... And it's not like they have a lot of resources, because I assume the other calls took all the resources with them. So it's strange that they're even surviving.
No, I mean, they still have herd. They still, like, I'm sure that they had enough, like, food in stores, just kind of people protected their own shit. But she said it was mostly kind of the lame and the weaker people that were left behind. And I doubt that in this situation where, you know, you go from one giant Khalasar to, what did you say, like 15 or something rolling around now?
Yeah, it wasn't many people.
Yeah, they're busy fighting with each other, worrying about each other, and like little people were breaking off in the middle of the night. They weren't wanting to start fights. They were wanting to get off on their own.
The thing is, we don't get a definition of how long, like, you know, Danny's servant tells her she's been asleep for a long time, but in the span of, like, fever dreams, you know, a couple days is a long time to be out having fever dreams. Like, we don't have any idea how long she was out.
Yeah,
true.
Yeah, but I got the impression that it was a few nights. You know, maybe a week, maybe.
Do you guys get the impression that, like, Dothraki culture would allow lame people to live?
No, I thought it was really weird that anybody was left behind.
I think if they can provide a purpose, they're not going to be. They're going to sit in the back, like.
Well, I mean, think about it though. Is the Khalasar has kind of their camp followers, and it has people. You know, people got to cook. People got to do the jobs they don't want to. They got slaves. They've got. You know, are they just going to spend all this time going and murdering the slaves they don't want to take with them? Like, no, they're about getting to the next territory before the newest call gets there first, right?
Well, I don't think they would kill those. I don't think they'd kill those slaves, like, you know, before leaving. It would more be like, okay, the Khalasar is rolling out. Nobody gets to stay behind with Daenerys, and if you can't keep up, you get murdered on the road.
I didn't think they'd go through the charge of murdering people. I thought they'd just leave you.
Yeah, like you're dead in the waste anyway.
Like, yes,
they just get left behind, but like so soon that they turn around and stick with Daenerys. I guess that could be it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, out of respect, you see that some people stayed behind, so I would imagine that there'd be enough people that out of respect for Drogo and what he was and for Dany, they're gonna leave that party behind, because she still has to be taken to Vyas Dothrak, at least that's what most of them think. So they're, you know,
yeah,
right.
That's
they need a party behind to do that.
And then plus his blood riders, right?
Yeah.
Who become Dany's blood riders?
And well, they're supposed
to... That's her own thing, that they exist before,
most of before then, right? Because all run off.
Yeah, his blood riders name themselves Khals, and they
which aren't they supposed to like avenge? Like they didn't kill Miri Mazur. Like
well, but he didn't.
Aren't
die,
they supposed to avenge like the person that?
Do you think maybe they just said, "Oh fuck him"? He didn't go out. You know, he didn't go out on the Fury Road. So I'm doing my own thing now.
Yeah, I think that's it. They lose all their respect for him. Because
once
of the
he
way
falls
he
off
dies.
His horse.
I mean, the
yeah, once
yeah.
he falls off
his
horse.
Okay,
yeah. Yeah.
They're supposed to
they
die with him, right?
They can't ride. Yeah.
Yeah. And they must
like
be
little bitches, and they're like, "Yeah, we're taking your Khalasar."
Yeah, they must be scared shitless of Miri also, because they like before Drogo is dead, all they want to do is murder her,
And then Daenerys wakes up.
Or rape her.
An unspecified amount of time later, and Miri Mazdoor is, like, running the show in this new, like, slave-only Khalasar.
Looks that way.
She's not really running the show, but they were, I think they were...
well, I mean, until Dany wakes up.
Figure out what to do, like, to... Because Drogo's fucked up, they're like, hey, what's going on? You know, maybe they thought she could help.
Yeah, yeah.
Hi, I think I'm back.
Yay!
Tonya's back!
Oh, hey!
Yay! Let's move on to Dany 10 here. You ready, Nadia?
I am ready, but there's a toddler running around the background, so I can't promise.
Yeah, that's okay.
Let the toddler do the reading.
That would be amazing.
Even silence can't promise silence.
Yeah, that's true.
Wow. Nice call.
Well, I was fairly quiet for a while I wasn't on the call, so.
No, but you can't promise that you would be there, because the bad connection, so.
Oh, that's true. Oh, yeah.
Right. Punny. All right. Take it away, Nadia.
Okay, so, Dany 10. Dany sets what remains of Drogo's Khalasar to building a pyre for him. Argo and Rakaro kill a stallion for the pyre. Miri Mazdoor tells Dany it will not be enough and that Dany does not know the spells for blood magic. Dany has her silenced. They pile Drogo's treasures on the pyre, but Dany saves her bride's gifts. So Jorah calls her princess, but Dany reminds him Viserys is dead and she is now his queen. Jorah thinks Dany means to die on the pyre with Drogo, but Dany assures him she will not. As the sun begins to lower to the west, Dany gathers her Khalasar and declares that they are all free, even the slaves. She names Argo, Jogo, and Rakaro as Goes, but they each say it is not possible for them to be Go for a woman. She takes an oath from Ser Jorah as well and names him the first of her queen's guard. Then Dany prepares herself with a scalding hot bath, and later she prepares Drogo for his journey into the Nightlands. Drogo is then placed on the pyre and oil is poured over it. Then Dany calls for her dragon eggs and places the black beside Drogo's heart, the green beside his head, and the white between his legs. As Dany climbs off the pyre, Miri Mazdoor says Dany is mad. Dany has Ser Jorah bind Miri Mazdoor to the pyre. She says Dany will not hear her scream, but Dany says, I will, but it is not your screams I want, only your life. I remember what you told me. Only death can pay for life. Then they only have to wait for the first stars to come out. The first star is a comet, burning red, the dragon's tail. Dany lights the pyre and it is soon ablaze. Soon enough, Miri Mazdoor begins to scream. The blaze quickly becomes too hot to withstand and everyone backs away except Dany. Then she starts to step towards the fire. She thinks she sees Drogo in the fire, mounted on a stallion with a whip in his hand. With a loud crack, one of the dragon eggs lands at her feet, broken and smoking. Soon there is a second and a third crack. When the fire dies at last, Ser Jorah finds her among the ashes, with her clothes and hair burned away. Two dragons are suckling at her breasts, and the third is draped across her shoulders. Ser Jorah falls to his knees soon followed by Argo, Jogo, and Rakaro, who claim her as blood of my blood. Soon, every one of her Khalasar follows, and Dany knows they are hers. Hers as they were never Drogo's. As Daenerys Targaryen rose to her feet, for the first time in hundreds of years, the night came alive with the music of dragons.
And dragons and misogyny.
Man, this... Oh, okay. Well done.
I have another theory.
Drop the mic and move on to Clash of Kings. Oh, wait a second.
I love the background face.
Is this anyone else's like favorite chapter in the series? Like this is one of my favorites for sure.
That last line is beautiful.
Yeah.
There's so many good things. There's, you know, she tells Miri Mazdoor, like, oh yeah, you will scream like fucking Batman. You know, like but the scene with the when she, you know, names her blood riders and they're all like, "This is awkward, Khaleesi." At least that's how that's yeah. At least that's what they say in the audiobook. They're just like, yeah, you know, I've got other shit to do and this isn't appropriate. You know, like, in the, I forget who it was who even says, it's like, "You shame me, you know, being blood rider to a woman, I couldn't do that." And then immediately, I mean, we get to the end of the chapter and they're all like, "Oh, fuck. Dragons, this chick isn't killed by the fire," and they're like, "Oh yeah,
yeah,
I'm down on one knee, we're good, so sorry."
Yeah. It's just, we just witnessed some shit.
Yeah. Like, no one's gonna believe us, man, no one will believe this.
They're like, "God, if you want me to follow him, just show me a sign." Alright, that'll do.
Like, I'm gonna, yeah. Like, I'm gonna tell people I follow a woman and they're gonna be like, "Whatever." I'm gonna be like, "Dude, the dragons and the fire," and they're gonna be like, "Fuck you, like, I wish I had a camera."
I like when she tells Jar he'll have a Valyrian steel longsword. I'm just thinking in his head, he's going, "I had one, I gave it up."
Totally, oh my God. I forgot about that bit too. Like,
just like Longclaw.
The only thing ruining the gravitas of this chapter is how strong Jorah's manwoody is. Like, more than any other chapter. Jorah is laying it on too thick in this chapter. He's trying to run away to a Shai. Like,
well, he's,
why the fuck would Danny want to go to a Shai?
This is his
the one
best...
where he kisses her. He's pretty man way hard.
This is his best shot, though. Like,
he kisses her in this chapter.
Does he?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
She kisses him on the lips when she names him to her Queensguard.
Right.
Well, that's different. The time that he took advantage of her and just like laid one on her, and she's like, "Whoa, he shouldn't have done that."
Yeah.
And he was like, "You were made for kissing." He's like, "Whoa, easy, Jorah.
But
slow
you know
down.
What? Like, you can say whatever you want about Jorah, but he's, you know, he's into her. She reminds him of his old wife and all this. And he makes his move at the only point where he could possibly try to make a move. Because Drogo's dead. He thinks she's just going to commit suicide. Let's go off. I mean, you know, as soon as these dragons come out, it's a different world. So he took his shot when he actually had the best opportunity and, you know, it didn't work out. But, you know,
but he waits until it isn't until in Clash that he actually kisses her, right?
No, I know, so, but he's like trying to get her to run off with him here. And I mean, this is the only
he also took a shot with a 15-year-old.
Like, hey, in this world, you're an adult at like 16.
It's a really hot 15-year-old.
Yeah, it's just
he's
hot.
He's trying to bring her to a Shai where she literally won't survive.
She's already a crone, She's already a crone. Let's not forget that.
I just listened to that World of Ice and Fire discussion the other day, and I like the points you guys made about why would you want to run off to a Shai out of all places.
It's very valid where nothing points, lives.
I really don't. Yeah, that's not very romantic, is it?
He also says E.T. and Lang, I think, or something like that.
Maybe he was just trying to get her as far away from Robert as possible, I guess.
Yeah,
because he kind of knew what was going on.
Yeah.
But it is still pretty dodgy.
Maybe it's just world exposition.
Yep.
Yeah, maybe George had no idea what was there when he wrote that.
Speaking of George and dodgy, his sex talk makes me creepy. Like, the last step was for her sex. Eerie's finger felt as light and as cool as a lover's kiss as it slid softly between her lips.
That wasn't as bad as last chapter when she tried to arouse Drogo.
Oh, yeah.
Using all of her body.
I feel like that was the saddest thing, though. Like, even though it was creepy, it was still, like, the saddest thing.
I like how she decides if he can't get an erection for this, he's dead.
it's creepy. It's more George writing, you know. He does this like you would expect a middle-aged man to write this sort of stuff. But, you know, it's also effective to the point where, you know, we get that she's just, this is her last-ditch effort, and... It's satisfying and creepy all at the same time, right? Like, it's like, oh, this, you know, it's like this really sad thing she's trying to do, but also you're like, you gotta think about who's writing it, and I don't know. That's when, just don't think too hard, I guess.
Would that be considered rape?
Would what?
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, it would be. Yeah.
Of Drogo?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
According to modern...
The tables have turned.
Because if you have a girlfriend...
Hold on.
Boyfriend, husband, whatever, and you know, they're asleep and you wake them up, you know, with a little something something, like, because you know they're into that, that ain't rape. That's just like a little morning foreplay, right?
It's the fact that his brain dead, there's no consent at all.
Right, but
it's just weird to do it to somebody who's not there.
She thinks he might be in there, you know? And it's basically, there's just no one at home. So, I mean, this is kind of weird, but it's, you know, it's basically like she's just doing this to an inanimate object, almost.
Yeah.
Right, because yeah, there was a...
That's not fucking okay.
I can't believe she didn't try it with her dragon's egg. Just get right on top.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh.
Dang it, Brett.
I have a theory about where she puts the dragon eggs on the pyre.
Thank God.
She puts one over his heart, and it's the black one, and she puts one by his head, which I think is the white one, and she puts under his arm. Or maybe I got the white and the green mixed up, but she puts one on his head, one under his arm, and one over his heart. I think that represents that she'll keep the heart one for herself because she's the more feeling character, which is showing already in the series that Drogo is hers. The arm one, whichever it is, will end up going to Jon Snow because he's a fighter, and the head one will go to Tyrion because he's a thinker.
Why didn't she put one between his legs?
That could be it, but she puts one she puts one between his legs.
That one.
No, she does.
That's John.
That's John.
That's all three-legged Snow over there. All right. No, I don't know. That's, you know,
he's got two long claws.
The problem with looking for too many kind of weird connections at like this point in the books is that so much of this stuff, he set up things, but he didn't really make as deep connections like that, like all these crazy theories and stuff. So if something like that were to come out, like it'd be like he just sort of used it later on. Looking back, I don't think it's something he set up at this point. You know,
I think it could be. I think it could be one of those things that you'll look back and go, "God damn, he had it in his head from way back then." And I could imagine that.
I think like,
definitely means something because the one she places next to her heart, to his heart, is the black one, which she keeps for herself, right? Drogo is the one she starts fighting.
I think there's significance there, but yeah. I think for the other two writers, like, I don't really think it's going to matter. I mean, if we even get them, right? Who knows?
It's the kind of thing, like, I wouldn't call it Ed.
Probably go to, you know, somebody she'll end up with.
Daria.
Yeah. He would be the one between the legs. No,
Victarion?
I don't think they're, you know, I said Tyrion and Jon just because I like the secret Targ stuff, but it could be anybody.
Ben Plum.
I think it just represents someone who thinks and someone who fights that will get the other dragons.
That would be kind of cool if that's how it ends up.
I like it.
That would be cool.
I could see that. Because head, heart, and arm is very specific, you know? Like, why would he not do, like, one under each of his arms or something like that?
White Raven approves this theory.
But I don't know, maybe in Dany's mind...
It's been vetted, it's good.
In Dany's mind, she probably is just like, I'll put one by the head, one by the heart, and the third one, she was just like, fuck it, I don't know, I'll put it under the arm, whatever.
The arm is basically next to his heart.
Yeah, it's head, heart, underneath the arm, and in between the legs.
Yeah. Well, that's four.
No. The one that's next to his heart is tucked under his arm, like a football.
Yeah.
An American football.
Right. I still like the idea of John being the dick.
He's marking all of the favorite parts.
Yep.
No. The one in between the legs is Brown Ben Plum.
Because it's brown, and that's where the brown comes from.
Also, John is dead anyway and not coming back. So.
I don't know. I stand by my theory.
Which dragon is Quentin gonna ride?
He already rode the only dragon he was going to.
He is alive.
He's the head one.
Quentin is alive. That is That is canon.
Nope. Yes. Just because Bina said it doesn't mean it's canon.
It's not everything canon. Bina says is canon.
No, Preston Jacobs also says it's true.
Then it's not true.
Yeah, because that guy's full of shit.
It's true if it's in, like, the first 30 seconds of the video, and then...
I really feel like he's trolling us sometimes.
I haven't watched any of his videos.
I love how crazy his videos get, and just the whole scientific method he does.
I think they're really entertaining, but, like, whenever someone references them in like a more serious speculation discussion.
Not that.
Yep.
Does anybody else think the comet is important?
No.
Comet is around for so long.
Do you think it brought back the magic or anything like that, or is it just a coincidence? I can't believe it's a coincidence.
Preston Jacobs thinks it's a satellite.
Oh my fucking god.
Well, we already covered this actually on the Mad Max podcast. If you keep going west, you run into Mad Max World. So.
Right.
That's
west of Westeros is Australia.
Yeah, it is known, and there you go.
It is not known. That might be my favorite Roy Dotrice line.
It is known.
It's just interesting that the comet, like, old Nan says it means dragons, and that is so weird because dragons are born the day the comet.
It means dragons because they old came from that? The moon, and that is a piece of the moon that just keeps coming back every so often.
Yeah. Yeah, and even Osha says it means fire and blood, which is
Targaryen.
Targaryens.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting that it, like George said, old Nan's right on a lot of stuff, and the first thing she says is it means dragons.
Yeah, but John is always right. Does he say anything about it?
So did John get his powers from her?
Does John even talk about it? Can they see it at the wall?
He's just whining about some random bullshit because he sucks.
Jesus.
Everyone else is looking at it, and he's looking at the ground, like, wishing he could leave.
It's his hair.
Like, no one likes like Charlie me. Brown.
We'll save that. We'll save that for the John chapter. But I do think the comet has to be significant in some way. But I don't know if it's a chicken or egg sort of thing. Like, is the magic bringing the comet around, or did the comet bring the magic around, or what's going on? And I don't think we'll ever get an answer. And I don't think we need one, personally. I think it's just like if Tyrion's secret Targaryen. I mean, if he becomes the head of the dragon, and we never get anything about that answered, I'm perfectly fine. You know, like it does. We don't need to.
Well, I think it's. It's more like Hail Bop, where all those people killed themselves and then were got up into the spaceship. So
there's just so much blood sacrifice going on right now, it brought the magic back? Is that what it is?
Yeah. Westeros. Yeah. I mean, those guys are up in the spaceship, for sure, right? they wore their purple Nikes or black Nikes
too
or whatever.
Soon, Matt, too soon.
Dude, that was like 10, 20 years ago.
We're just getting around to OJ now, okay?
do that.
Let's move on.
No, but what about the last comment on a meteor thing? I mean, a comet. I was just thinking that why does it have to have a specific meaning towards what's happening? Couldn't it just be like a herald of a new age or something like that? Maybe it doesn't even have a giant significance, and people just put significance into it. That doesn't have a reason to be there.
That does seem to be the case in that I don't think that the comet means, you know, event A is going to happen, but if the comet happens to coincide with, like, all of a sudden the Red Priests have a shit ton of power and the dragons and all, like, if they're all connected, which seems to be suggested, then that would make sense. I don't think the comet's, like, there to oversee Dany and her dragons. Maybe it just all happens at the same time and it's a coincidence.
Yeah, I mean, in our actual history, like, comets were, like, the sign of the apocalypse, like, every time, like, or the sign of, like, was it Edward saw the three suns and they think it was a comet, and that's what gave them the victory on the battlefield, Constantine, you know, converting to Christianity. They can just, like, make up shit. It's like, oh, the comet, like, meant this, because this thing just sort of happened.
History is full of things that we would consider coincidence, that people considered omens and very significant, you know, because they didn't understand them, or the timing was just perfect. Like, you know, this is, you know, a silly story, but, you know, like, you know, as a kid at church or something, and we had a rather large youth group, and they had a concert outside one day, and it ended up, there was, like, lightning, like, happening, and it's, like, you know, right during, like, a certain riff, and you're like, oh, man, that must be, you know, must be prophetic or something. Like, no, it's just the lightning happens to strike in the middle of a chord, yeah. Like, big deal. Like,
yeah, I think Mark Twain was born and died while Haley's Comet was around.
Yeah, something like that. I heard the same thing. That the next Mark time Twain. It came around, yeah, he died. So
Illuminati. So. All right. So do we have anything else to say? I mean, this is a pretty significant chapter here. This is.
Do we want to talk about it coming this early in our reread rather than at the end of the book?
Yeah. Oh, I was going to save that for the end, but we can actually kind of touch on that here if you want. Just to say that...
No, we can do it at the end.
It's definitely... I mean, because this is the... Normally, this is the exclamation mark at the end of your read of this book, which is a good one. But I think the John chapter also works to that extent. Which are not as good. I know. But, like, it's another riser, so...
But, no, I always
I think they touched on the last reread, that, like, this book... pretty much finishes. It could be a single book.
That'd be a pretty shitty single book.
Yeah,
I'd be like, well, what the fuck? What happened?
Oh, well, yeah, but Game of I mean, Thrones, like, it just like Game of Thrones was it? You mean?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And just, like, I mean, obviously, there's 50 storylines like that could go on, but pretty much, like, you know, Rob's the king of the North. The end. Like, there's dragons, the end.
And 50 years later, people are like, well, obviously she got dragons back and came and took over the kingdom, you know? Like, right guys? Like, and everyone argues over what actually... That would have been an interesting fandom right there.
Yeah, yeah, it wouldn't have been... It would have worked. It's more interesting to get to continue, obviously. But it's...
Oh, yeah.
It wouldn't have been.
I think Danny's story works as a single book, but I don't know about John's.
Yeah, because John's story just doesn't work.
Well, they're going off to find Benjen, and they find him, guys, and he's totally not dead. And then the
White Walkers.
He's totally not Dario.
He's not Cold Hands. He's not Dario. He's not anyway.
The White Walkers were just nothing.
Everyone is Dario.
Oh, those White Walkers, yeah, you know.
They killed them both right there in the Solar.
That was it.
Mormont Solar. That was it. That was all of it.
Bryce is the best.
All right. So let's move on to Brand 7. And I believe that's you, Brett.
That is, in fact, ready? All right.
Oh, boy. Let's do this.
So Sir Drogic is trying to teach the new recruits how to not fight like geese while Lewin checks out the comet through his new telescope lens. And we learn that Winterfell and the surrounding areas are all tapped out of fighting men because they either went with Ned or with Sir Roderick. Rob. So Bran thinks, if I still had my legs, he would beat them all, because he was that good, I guess. He could beat full-grown adults. We learn that Bran can't count, because there's no way he beat Tommen 50 times while they were in Winterfell. And Bran wants to use Hodor for legs so he can fight. And Lewin explains that that's a bad idea, since you must be at one with mind and body to fight. And I call that BS, because if a knight can fight from a horseback, Bran could fight from Hodor back. And they just need to practice and train together. Then again, maybe Hodor is dumber than a box of hair and could not match the wits of his horse dancer. So Bran tells Lewin about his crow dream. He talks to his father in the crypt, and Ned was sad. And he said it was something about John, he thought. And Bran tells him that he tried to get Hodor to bring him down to the crypts to look for father, but he wouldn't go down, and he said he almost hit him. And then Lewin wises Bran to the age-old adage, don't beat the legs that carry you. And then Lewin explains that Ned is not down there and he won't be for many years. Oh, we'll see on that one. And then Bran says he was there last night. Lewin sighs and gets Asha to carry him down into the crypts to show him that Ned's not there. Summer is reluctant to go down, but they go down anyway. And Lewin, ever the teacher, decides a history pop quiz is in order and tells Bran to recollect the names and deeds of the old kings, which I won't go through because I don't know if they matter. And then... Bran says that Rhaegar raped Lyanna, which I have two issues with. One, that they actually, he actually knows that kind of detail about the situation. He's just a little kid. And then, if in fact that Ned knows that Rhaegar didn't rape Lyanna, why would he allow his kids to believe that? So that's kind of a argument for Ned not knowing.
I don't think Ned.
Maybe they don't talk much about it.
Yeah, because Ned is just like, mum's the word. Everyone else would have told them about it, but Ned.
Right. All right.
The other part, yeah. And then, shouldn't know about that shit. That's terrible.
Yeah, who tells a kid, like, oh, like, Rhaegar, oh, Rhaegar, Rhaegar, you're on.
Dude, Bran's not a kid. He's almost a man grown.
Yeah, half the age of Rob, but he's almost a man grown.
Yeah, and when
Rob just became a man grown.
Well, do you think he realized about rape after the whole tower thing? Or is it...
Oh, yeah.
Or,
he doesn't remember that, though.
No, no, but...
No, but he didn't understand what was going on.
Yeah, he might
not... Doesn't even know what he's saying.
He might, yeah, he might be parroting something that he heard.
Yeah, it's like when you're a kid and you think that, like, words mean different things. Like, I thought, like, when you got wasted, that just meant you were, like, really tired and didn't get enough sleep. So I'd be like, oh, I'm so wasted.
Yeah.
And people would look at me like, what? Like, yeah, I'm wasted right now, like, because I was exhausted. So, and then you get older and you, like, oh, like, so maybe he thought rape just meant that he, like, kidnapped and killed her or something, or, I don't know. Like,
yeah. Yeah, right. I think that's it.
So they hear something in the darkness, and Lewin's checking it out, and Scott attacks from the darkness and plays tug-of-war with Lewin's arm. Bran calls for Summer to help. Rickon calls Scott over to him and tells him to leave his father be. He explains that he had a dream too and says that his father's coming home like he promised. Lewin bitches about Scott not being chained up, and Rickon does not give two shits about that. It's like, he doesn't like being chained up. Leave him alone. So Bran decides they will all go hang out in Lewin's place, and Usha uses this moment to teach Lewin about who the Lord is in Winterfell right now. We learn that Lewin is a dirty bastard. His tower's kind of a pigsty, and everything's just laying all over the place in disarray. And he tries to convince them and himself that there's a logical explanation for their Siamese dreams. Osha is not helping. His magic is not real cause, because she brings up the children of the forest. And Lewin says, the children only live in dreams. And then Osha must have been thinking, isn't that what we're talking about? No? And then Lewin tells Bran all the cool things the children could do. Like, they knew the songs of the trees, and they could fly like birds and swim like fish and talk to the animals and make beautiful music that would even make Sir Gregor cry. And he tells him to take a lesson, that a man who trusts in spells is dueling with a glass sword, as the children did. He shows them the dragon glass and tells them about it, and Bran asks to keep one. And Rickon, because he's four, thinks he should get four. And then remembers, Bran never learned how to count, so he sees this as a teaching moment for Rickon, so he'll know that more than a handful is not half a hundred. And makes him count out his four razor blades that Lewin's going to let him play with, like a responsible adult always do with four-year-olds. So then he goes on to give a Children of the Forest history lesson, that they lived in the Seven Kingdoms and before the men came, and they carved faces into the trees so the green seers would be able to keep an eye on everything. And then 12,000 years ago, the first men came with bronze weapons and riding horses. They cut down the trees to build and burn. The children could not allow this and declared war upon the men. They used magic to make the sea rise and swept away the arm of Dorne, but the first men still came across the sea. There was much blood, and the men began to overpower the children. Being stronger and better armed, the children didn't have much of a chance against them. They agreed on a peace summit in a weirwood on a island in the Great Lake called the God's Eye. They forged a pact, giving the men most of the land, the coasts, the high plains, the bright meadows, mountains, and bogs. The children got the deep woods, and the men were no longer allowed to cut down the weirwoods. They carved faces in the trees so the gods could witness the pact, and the green man group was formed to keep watch on this new Isle of Faces. 4,000 years of peace followed, and the first men even took the old gods as their own, probably after they saw all the awesome shit they could do. And their cooperation with the children, and their gods ended the Dawn Age and gave birth to the Age of Heroes. Then the Andals came, and they took the six southern kingdoms from the first men and put their weirwoods to the flame and killed all the children that they found. Only in the north did they hold firm by plugging the neck and throwing them back, so that all the children left, fled north. And then a raven came that was hurt and gave them news of Ned's death that they all secretly knew was coming. Ugh. And that's the end of the chapter.
So brutal.
I have a question. Why do you guys think that the Night's Watch got their raven before Winterfell? You think it's because it was wounded, it didn't make it fast enough? As fast?
Wow, that's interesting. Hmm. Yeah, that could be it. It never occurred to me that it was weird that the Night's Watch got their raven first.
It didn't until we did this reread to me.
Hmm. Does the Night's Watch raven specifically say that Ned is dead and not that he's just imprisoned?
I believe that's why Jon leaves, because they find out he's dead. And he's going to go help Rob in the fight, because he says in his chapter that his father's dead.
It could even be, I mean, we'll just, you know, this is probably just me, you know, justifying, but you can just say that they sent off the other raven to the Night's Watch first, you know?
Yeah, because why tell Winterfell?
Well, no, but I mean, like, maybe everyone's got those Night's Watch ravens because they never use them. And you know how the ravens work? You got to wait for one to come back to you or something. So maybe they didn't have one to go to Winterfell.
We know how the ravens work?
Well, I thought we do.
Yes, like, they basically actually, just go from
one place to another, right? Like, so
I think they're carted back.
They only go to one place.
John's chapter hasn't really.
That's carrier pigeons.
Yes.
Carrier pigeons, you have to, like, cart from one place to another, and they'll fly back home. But in Westeros,
that's essentially how it works.
That's how the ravens work.
In Westeros, I could have sworn they'll go back and forth. I thought that was the difference.
Oh, no, that's the whole thing. But I think that's actually spoilers, isn't it?
Spoilers for what?
For what?
How the ravens work?
Ravenry?
You think that's going to be a big deal in these books to come?
Yeah. No, I'm just saying. I'm just saying it's only described in the Winds spoiler chapter, right?
Oh, it might be only described in the Winds spoiler chapter.
I got the idea somewhere.
Oh no, don't give away this massive plot point.
Adam, I can't cite my source, but it stuck in my head because I remember thinking that it was absolutely crazy that they have to be carted back and forth like carrier pigeons rather than going back and forth between two locations.
Yeah, because that's what I thought was the difference, was that the ravens were a little bit better. Maybe I'm mixing something
that
up
makes,
on the
that
show
makes,
or something, then it must be.
They said they don't use pigeons because they're too weak, and they fall prey to other animals.
Yeah, fuck it, send 10 pigeons, like,
it'll get there. That would make it less likely that they would have a raven ready. Maybe they would have to send a message to someone else who would send a message to Winterfell, whereas the Night's Watch was just in King's Landing, and probably then, you know, Jorn would have brought ravens probably with him, right? And like that could have been sent right back, you know, straight up from King's Landing.
I mean, I don't want to turn this into like Raven Cast, the logistical issues of the ravens. But the Night's Watch in particular makes that like a ridiculous scheme. Like the ravens that go to the Night's Watch only go to the Night's Watch, and vice versa. Like that means they have to cart the ravens the whole length of the continent.
Yeah.
Well, they're always picking up new guys anyway, so maybe they're just dropping off ravens. Maybe Euron has a secret cache of ravens that he's just tolling around behind him.
Oh, that's it.
That we never
changed
hear
my
about.
Mental picture of Euron.
He actually loves birds. That's why he smells so bad all the time. It's bird shit all over him.
Do you actually think that the ravens could fly from Dorne or from Old Town all the way up to the Wall? Don't you think that it's more like a network? Don't you think more it's like a network? So they fly to maybe River Run or something further down, and then the message gets switched over to a raven that actually is programmed to go to the Wall.
I don't think
wouldn't
so.
That be
I mean,
a
if you're,
huge
if you're playing,
security breach?
Well, yeah, if you're playing the Game of Thrones, you're not into that.
No, but then you need a rider instead. I mean, you can't. I'm just saying it would be very unlikely that a raven would fly from all the way down from Dorne all the way up to the Wall. I mean,
you don't realize that birds actually traverse long distances all the time?
Oh yeah, they do. Oh yeah, they certainly do. But it's not like a thing that would. You wouldn't be sure that they actually reach there, and you wouldn't be sure that they actually reach there in a timely manner.
Yeah, but especially for like announcements and just saying like, "Hey, there's a new king" or some shit to the Night's Watch, so you don't really care. That's like, whatever, you send it out. If it doesn't get there, you're like, ah, someone else will tell him, right? It's better than sending a person.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
One thing I noticed in this chapter is that I would be pissed if I was either one of those other two guys that got savaged by Scott before before Lewin. Like, they're just letting that dog savage people. Like, what?
It's not a dog. It's a wolf.
But it's a dire wolf.
Even worse. It's a dire wolf. Lewin's arm is described as like ragged and bloody. Like, potentially he could die of infection from that animal bite. And
well, everyone knows that a dire wolf's mouth is a lot cleaner than Lewin's <human's> chicken. Mouth.
So, you know, when you get like two or three emails from a person because their emails are malfunctioning or something, could you imagine how annoyed you'd be if you got the same message from 10 pigeons?
Yeah. Or if you're at Castle Black and a bunch of ravens show up with no messages on them.
Message at all.
Dog rings, dog.
One is like, Helen, I've done something to the new Dropbox. Come take a look. You're like, what?
What? One thing I could say is, like, reading this chapter, it's been a year or two since I've read it, and my son just turned 4, and so, like, you know, I'm, like, thinking, like, oh my gosh, he's, you know, at the same age as Rick on there, and I'm like, oh, this would be, like, it's, like, even more depressing than this chapter usually is, you know, like, poor Rickon's like, yeah, I know he's not coming back, and you're like, oh, Rickon King.
Yeah, he won't be 4 forever, and winter is coming.
Yeah,
he's got a man up, right? Doesn't Ned say that in, like, one of the first chapters?
He was only 3 then, too.
Yeah, he was only 3, yeah.
But he has
damn,
to go
Ned. Ned's got no patience.
There was one quote that really stuck out to me in this chapter, and it was when Bran was talking about trying to get Hodor to go down into the crypts, and Hodor didn't want to, and Maester Lewin says to him, Hodor is a man, not a mule to be beaten. And I think that's very kind of telling for the rest of the story. Bran keeps treating Hodor kind of like an animal, especially when he starts warging into him and stuff. And I think that that's really morally kind of ambiguous.
And that was Maester Lewin's other quote, was basically, if you want to fight from Hodor's back, you basically have to be one with his mind and body. Mm. Which basically happens later when Bran walks into his mind.
Yeah, this chapter confirms it for me. Bran is going to be doing some full-on Hodor warging.
But he'll never jack off as Hodor because you don't beat him.
Oh my gosh.
Jesus Christ.
Well, the question remains, though. I mean, everyone assumes that we're going to see Bran becoming part of the Weirwood net because that's what's happened to Bloodraven, but I don't know if that's necessarily true. We do see that wargs or skin changers take over someone else, you know, like, it just like, I'm this wolf, but then he starts losing himself in the wolf. So I wonder if it's even possible to just take over another person and completely eject their personality, and is that something Bran would attempt, you know, because he's so desperate to have his legs back.
Yeah, didn't they actually do that in the
well,
book?
Well, he kind of wants...
He feels like he wants to, but...
Oh, you're talking. Yeah, I was talking about Bran. I mean, I think if Bran becomes powerful enough, like, do you think that's a possibility?
Oh yeah,
it's an abomination.
And part of it is that Hodor is not like a normal person that is going to be as self-aware. So maybe he would be easier to take over.
Well, doesn't he try to take over Mira at some point, and she like flips the fuck out?
Oh, what?
What?
What? No, what? When did that happen?
It must have been your dreams.
Hodor and he freaks out.
I thought that was like one of the last chapters of Bran. I don't remember.
Oh, there's this guy, what's his face?
That's Varamyr Sixskin.
Yeah,
he tries to take the old lady, and she flips the fuck out.
Yeah, she bites off her own tongue.
Yeah, I was...
Yeah, and rakes her own eyes.
For some reason, I have a very strong memory of him doing that to Mira, but I don't think that happened.
I think... Are you thinking about, like, he, like, tries to physically comfort Mira, and she's not about that?
Maybe that's it. I don't know. I don't remember.
Because I'm not. I don't remember it exactly like that.
I would say I'd love her or something.
So no, the, maybe what
he's
I remember
work into Hodor and get some strange.
Yeah. Do you think that's going to happen? Because I kind of have the feeling that he would step over the line because he's like a preteen and he doesn't know exactly what he's doing.
I'm so scared that it's going to happen. I really don't want it to, but yes, Patrick, I agree. I think that's going to happen.
I don't know. Hodor's got giant's blood in him. Poor Mira.
Yeah, man. He's going to break Mira in half.
Well, hopefully.
I don't think that'll ever happen.
I don't think it'll actually happen, but like the thought might cross his mind or something. But as long as that just doesn't actually come up.
Yeah, I mean, like, whatever. She wouldn't. I mean, it would be unwanted. Probably be rape, right?
No, but, well, I feel like if it's something that comes up and like it wouldn't, like, I don't think that George would have Bran do that with her unwillingly. Just no, but
it does seem like something George would, though.
Like, well, it's it seems to me it's something he would write, but do you think he would write it for Bran? Is what I'm saying. Like, it just doesn't feel like it fits Bran. But
yeah,
unless Bran is becomes evil. I mean,
unless he's he's being influenced by, you know, that, blood. Right?
That's
blood
kind Raven. Of. Well, I feel like it's right. It's in Bran's, like, you know, crossing the line with his warging abilities arc. You know, it's right along that trajectory that, you know, he spends too much time in Summer, and then he wargs into Hodor, and he doesn't understand what sort of invasion that is.
Yeah.
What I could see being feasible is. He takes over Hodor, maybe he is, you know, he's talking to Mira or something, or he becomes quite good at it, and he, you know, just, like, goes in for the kiss or something, and she's like, what the hell? You know, I could see that.
He, like,
okay, he points
at Bran, Hodor, and then points at his chest, Hodor.
No, but I mean, like, maybe he's so good at it, maybe he's so good at it that he actually, like, can so produce charming. Speech, is what I'm saying.
Well, doesn't Varamyr, like, warg into... the woman wolf and like loves getting like mounted from behind by one eye.
Yeah,
didn't you say that?
Varamyr is a freak.
I don't know if he loved it, but he's not experienced
the
it.
Instincts or whatever. I think were like
Varamyr has three direwolves that he.
They're not direwolves. They're just wolves.
Oh yeah, yeah. Three wolves.
Because they specifically says I should have taken his direwolf. That would be a second life fit for a king.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
The reason I brought up
foreshadowing. That's foreshadowing.
The reason I brought up the Bran stuff is because like I said, it's kind of morally corrupt to be warging into Hodor, and does that mean that maybe he won't understand the morals behind some other stuff that he does later?
I think you're right in a sense. I think that that Varamyr is the example that we're supposed to take from when we think about Bran and his descent into what it's essentially absolute power over living beings. That will corrupt in a sense. I mean, maybe not corrupt, but he won't see that what he's doing is wrong until it's too late.
That could happen.
Right, yeah. And he's also very young, so it's like...
I don't think it's this morally slippery slope, though, like we're thinking, because what he's doing with Hodor is what he does with him in real life. It's, you know, Hodor is a tool. Like Hodor is his buddy and stuff, but Hodor is his legs, Hodor does this, Hodor do this, Hodor do that, right? So, well, the guy doesn't really have a mind of his own, so yeah, of course, I'll just take it over. Like, but he would never just try that with Mira in real life. Like, he wouldn't do anything I don't think that he feels that he's already entitled to do as himself.
Let's hope not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say what I was going to say, because it's too far in the future in the books, and it's not really related to this, so I'm going to stay quiet. Well, it's just...
That's a good attribution.
Yeah, well, thanks for letting us know you aren't going to tell us something.
You guys, don't worry about it. White Raven, I'm going to reveal that later.
All right.
Do you want me to say what I was going to say? Because it really pertains more to like Storm of Swords and Dance with...
No, that's fine. Get it out.
If I don't like it, I'm just going to cut it anyway.
Okay. Yeah. He kind of like... He's in... Not in Ghost, but John feels him when he first like jumps into Ghost... And Bran actually opens his third eye. Like he's sleeping, John is sleeping, and Bran is in his dream, and he opens his third eye, then he's seeing through Ghost's eyes, he sees the camp.
Hmm.
So
I remember what you were talking about.
So is kind of invading other people.
I thought that John like warged into Ghost, and Ghost saw a weirwood that had Bran's face.
So John is doing something sort of similar. He's having like a wolf dream, which it seems like is like the precursor to active warging.
Yeah.
And he sees a weirwood with Bran's face. Yeah. And Bran does sort of the same, like, you know, now your third eye is open magic that Blood Raven does to Bran.
That might be Bran in the future, you know?
I'm increasingly a believer in, like, Bran from the future interacts with the main storyline theory. I actually really don't like it as a theory, but, like, the linear reread is, like, I keep seeing things that I'm thinking, oh, that's Bran from the future. Bran from the future is an active player in the current storyline.
Blood Raven.
Blood Raven. Right. Blood Raven.
So you're saying maybe Bran sends back the wolves?
I'm with you. Yeah, Bran sends back the wolves.
Yeah.
I mean, because Blood Raven could have done most of that. So, and either way, it doesn't matter. I don't know.
See, that's why I didn't want to hear
it. Yeah.
There's an interesting post on the A Song of Ice and Fire subreddit today about the event that crippled Hodor. Was the event that crippled Hodor orchestrated by Blood Raven or Bran from the future in order to create...
But he's not crippled.
Not crippled, sorry. Crippled his mind, yeah. Handicapped. In order to give Bran, you know, this useful man who can carry him into the North. I don't believe it. I don't believe it.
But was it an
but
event?
It brought up some good information.
Or was that just sort of how he was?
Yeah, you know.
Was he born dim-witted?
I always thought he was just born that way.
I thought he was.
He reached into the womb and just took his brains away.
Oh my gosh!
There are
butterfly effect style.
We've already seen him messing with direwolves inside the womb. Why not?
I mean, there are some things that can do that to a person, like hydrocephalus, where you get water in your brain and things like that. That can do it after birth, but the vast majority of that stuff is congenital.
Yeah.
Yeah, he has aphasia, so he can't, like, it's an actual, like, thing that happens to people where they can only express themselves in, like, one word.
Yeah.
He picked a bad word.
That's not even his name.
Oh, it could be worse.
Right, well, what does Hodor even mean? Maybe
it's supposed to mean Walter. It's supposed to mean Walter.
Yeah.
Holder. Odor.
Hmm.
I think it's supposed to be Walder.
Right. So
welcome to the podcast on the etymology of Hodor.
Yeah, I think we're done with the Bran chapter, I believe.
Yeah.
Alright. Any final thoughts?
I was trying to figure out a way to work in "You ain't got no legs, Lieutenant Bran."
Jesus. Well, there it is. You forced it. All right.
You worked it in.
Well done. Well done.
All right. And this brings us to the end of Game of Thrones, at least in the linear sense. And that is the final Jon chapter. And here to bring all the Jon love is Tanya.
In this chapter, John decides to shit on everything Aemon told him at the end of the last chapter, and tries to desert from the Night's Watch, and of course fails. Sam, being a much better friend than John deserves, tries to stop him, but John, being a dick, all but rides him down. This incident of course confirms him being a prophet, because, I quote, "At the last moment, when they were almost on him, he jumped aside as John had known he would, stumbled and fell." Prophecy. So yeah, John knew that Sam would jump aside, stumble, and fall, and he does it anyway, because he's such a great friend. Awesome character. Very likable. even though he didn't want Longclaw in the first place, he's now moping about how abandoning it was really hard for him. He also whines about being a bastard, an oathbreaker, motherless, friendless, and damned, even though half of those things are just consequences of him acting the way he does. So it kind of seems fair, but whatever.
Wait,
instead of
what?
Letting...
Why? Huh?
Because he's an Oathbreaker. No one made him an Oathbreaker, and no one made him friendless. He's like, I'm gonna go leave my friends. I'm gonna go break my oath. Oh no, I'm an Oathbreaker and friendless. Oh no, terrible.
But motherless?
No, that one. I said he had half of it coming, not all of it. Oh. He didn't.
She said half,
he didn't deserve
right?
that one.
Okay, fine.
Pay attention. No, he doesn't deserve all of that, to be fair. But
my mother died. Well, you had it coming. It was when I was born.
Yeah.
Well, technically, some characters in the book would probably argue that he.
That's what Tywin
her.
Does.
Tywin.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Anyway, instead of just letting John get away with this bullshit, Sam goes and tells their friends about it, so they catch up with him, which is a little bit surprising that they were faster than him, because there's like 7 of them and he's on his own and he's also trying to be quick and clearly not doing a very good job at it. But yeah, so they catch up with him. Ghost helps them find John. And John calls Ghost a traitor, which is quite funny, seeing as Ghost is not the one breaking his oath and abandoning his friends, but, his friends recite the vows, which is actually a pretty awesome moment, despite John being present. And they convince him to come back, which kind of makes it look like he just never wanted to leave in the first place and just wanted the attention, which he got, but that's 10 minutes of my life wasted reading about
Damn.
It and going anywhere.
Wow.
He still says he's planning on trying to leave again. And so he goes back to the wall, and the next morning he brings Mormont his breakfast, and it turns out that Mormont, of course, knew that John would run away, and he informs him that if he hadn't come back with his friends, he would have been caught anyway. So that was even more pointless, but yeah. Mormont tells John that they have some news about wildlings hatching some sort of plan, and some animals apparently fleeing from something that's beyond the wall. And he says he wants to find Benjen dead or alive, so the Night's Watch will ride out and force against the wildlings and the others. And he'll be commanding them, and he wants to take John with him as a squire. That's sufficiently entertaining for John, so he decides not to join Rob and fight in his war after all, and just go and hang with Mormont instead, because he's doing more fun stuff, and he gets to keep on clock.
I think Mormont gives the best line in the series when he says, "When dead men come hunting in the night, do you think it matters who sits the Iron Throne?" And that is like encapsulates the whole series of them fighting
yep.
in the south for no reason.
That's true. Yeah.
It kind of sucks.
So Ghost scaring his horse is definitely Bran, right?
No.
Bran, Benjen, or Bloodraven, one of the other.
but isn't that stupid actually is for Jorah to say that? To Jorah to say that? Because yes, it does matter who sits the Iron Throne.
Well,
if he's an idiot sitting the Iron Throne, then there won't be any support from the rest of the realm.
Yeah,
you know, it would help.
The point is, whoever's on the Iron Throne just needs to handle their shit if something goes down, and it doesn't really matter what house it is. No one gives a fuck. You know, if it's the end of the world, you fight the apocalypse together.
Yeah, the true threat is in the north, and they'll just barrel roll down to the Iron Throne regardless.
They already built the wall to keep these dang wildlings out, so they thought they were safe, but clearly the wall doesn't help anything, America.
Oh. Gotta make it 10 feet
oh
higher.
Oh boy.
Make the wildlings pay for it.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Go ahead.
Maybe part of the point is also just not wasting resources on trying to figure out who's... Of course, it kind of matters who's sitting on the Iron Throne, but don't waste any resources on trying to be that person
when you have, like, 3 armies that could be fighting the others rather than themselves, I think, is what he meant.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know.
I think it's interesting that Mormont had men watching John, and John never noticed, so maybe he wasn't Ranger material after all.
Maybe John ain't that
Maybe
tight.
He's not a prophet after all.
Oh, I do have him being a prophet. John can't see Rob's smile. John can't see Rob's smile because he's a prophet, and that never happens.
Or maybe Jorah is just bluffing. Maybe he's just bluffing. Yeah, I totally knew you were going to do that. So watch out. I'll catch you next time. Promise.
He might be. That hadn't occurred to me, but that's possible.
I was just thinking how good that shows how good a Lord Commander he is. He knows his men. He's like, "What do you think? I'm stupid."
Yeah.
And then he's followed up by perhaps his biggest folly. So, leading the ranging.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it when he calls it Age of Orioles Stark.
Well, I think leading the ranging was a really good idea given the information he had. I think he just he was a bit more ambitious with it than he should have been, perhaps. But I think a big part of it was he thought, well, this is going to be a quick scouting party. I'll go look for my men, and I've got a whole shit ton of people that don't have any experience that are going to need it pretty soon. And so I get them out there, they get confidence, you know, they're if we're getting more men, they're able to train them, etc., etc. Otherwise, you just have a bunch of rookies.
So,
well, I thought it was just to, like, hit the wildlings. I didn't think it was to, like, you know, train men
well, no,
or do anything
but,
else.
He was looking for, he was looking to see what happened to Benjen. Of course, he assumes there's, you know, a small wildling group he can take care of or figure out what's going on, which is important. But at the same time, I think he also realizes that a lot of these people have never seen combat, and the dead are rising, so maybe now's the time. You know, throw them in the deep end and get a little experience.
Well, it's also telling in the next book when John is like, well, why aren't we sending out parties to find Benjen? He's like, well, it's easier for one man to find 300 than for 300 to find one. So maybe by going out, he's hoping Benjen will find them and tell him what's going on.
Sure.
But he says we'll go out in force against the wildlings, against the others, with what, 300, 500 men in total, I think?
300. No, I think it's 300
so
in 300 total.
And then joined by 200 from the Shadow Tower, right?
I thought they were bringing 2 and 100 were coming from the Shadow
That's
Tower.
What
I'm
I
probably
thought,
wrong.
But you could be
well,
wrong.
100 might also be coming from Eastwatch.
Okay, so, but anyway, it's like, but there are, what, 100,000 wildlings? Even if they're not well-organized, it's still...
Well, they don't know that, though.
I'm saying...
They have no clue that they're going to run into even a group of 1,000 wildlings, right?
Well, yes, but they do know the others are coming.
Well,
they do.
Yeah, but they don't have a good idea of what that really means either. Yeah. You know, they've been attacked by 2 whites.
Who were their own men, and they're like, what the fuck? Like, they at this point, they know almost nothing.
Right.
I mean, I think it's
like...
Which is then the good idea to take a ranging of that many people out if you don't know what you're up against. Because, I mean...
Well, that's why they're taking that many out, because they figure somebody will make it back that way and give them information. Because they've been sending out ranging parties and nobody's coming back.
It's just strength in numbers.
Like 5 people.
If you're sending out an expedition, you send 2 or 3 people out, they don't come back, you send 50 just to be safe.
I agree. You send 50 and not 500.
Well, I'm saying proportionally, though, like, he maybe was just like, well, you know, maybe this is just him overestimating the threat. We got the dead rising, we got wildlings, I want to bring as much as I can, and he thinks that, you know, it'll be no problem. And he's probably he's probably being overly cautious in his mind.
It's like the American invasion of Iraq, where they said we need half a million people, and we only sent, like, a quarter of that.
Yeah, but he actually sent 500 out. And
no, he sent 300, right?
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure it's 300.
With 200 in
I think they had 2 from Castle Black and 1 from the Shadow
Tower.
How many
came from Sparta?
I think it was... Oh, yeah, I'm not quite sure. But
even if it is 300, that's quite a large proportion of...
It's like almost half.
...of the Night's Watch.
That's true.
It's a third. But the thing is... The whole thing with the Night's Watch, you have not even a third is Rangers, maybe it's I don't know, a fifth of them are Rangers. I wouldn't know specifically. The
whatever
point
it
is
far less than it used to be.
Yeah, but the Rangers are the only ones who's actually been training to go out ranging, to go out and fight in the terrain, while the other ones are just trained in sword combat and defending the wall. So taking a 300 force, strong man force, or out to range, where most of them don't have any experience in ranging at all, just seems like he's kind of...
Isn't that why you take so
waiting.
Many, though?
Yeah, it's more of a moving camp than a ranging.
Yeah, but you don't... Oh, I'm... personally, I would say even if you, especially because you don't know what's out there.
But that's why they're taking so many, so they can deal with what's out there. Yeah,
I guess it's just different schools of thought, because there are two schools of thought would be take everything and just, you know, deal with it with force, and then you're safe and you don't have to worry about it, which is kind of what he did, or just keep sending out small parties. And that's going to take longer, especially if they never come back. So maybe he's just like, fuck it, let's get this done. Time is of the essence. Like,
yeah, well, just send bigger, small parties instead. Well,
I mean, isn't that the state of the Night's Watch, where they're not knights and they're not, you know, they're rapers and thieves rather than, like, trained warriors?
Yeah.
Do you guys think if Ned had been there, Mormont would have still led the raging, or let Ned command the ranging? Or do you think Ned would still be in training?
Either way, it's a win. It's a win for the Watch, because either Ned leads the ranging or gets left behind
to command.
And is a much more electable Lord Commander than Snow.
Well, he would have done well with electable. Ice.
Yeah. Snow's elected. They're both electable. It's just competence is maybe.
Also, you have, like, if Ned was still alive, all the reasons why Snow would want to march on Winterfell wouldn't be there, essentially. So, yeah, it'd be a good idea if Ned were there. That would be good.
They still would have taken Jon on the ranging?
You know,
do you think he'd still be the steward to Lord Mormont? There's so many ifs, it doesn't matter.
We can all agree that at the beginning of this book, when Ned is offered Hand of the King, he should have just joined the Night's Watch, and that would have solved a lot of problems.
Totally would have.
Hand of the King. I'm joining the Night's Watch. Sorry, yeah, I gotta go.
Fuck. The only way to get out of this is by joining the Night's Watch. He could have just, that's one line in the book, he could have written it in, George, and it would have justified the decision.
Yeah.
But you screwed
Come
the
Come on, John, let's go.
But then
he's got four sons and a couple daughters. His heirs are okay.
I mean, he's only, 28 or something, or 31? He's, like, so young in the book.
He's really young.
But, you see, that's the problem. Then we wouldn't have 23 years of and 5 books of pure awesomeness, because then most of the problems would already been over. I mean, except for...
Don't have a conclusion yet.
He would have just wrote the problems a different way.
I think Stannis would have rebelled against the kingdom, because he already had an idea that Joffrey was a bastard.
Who?
Stannis, he said.
Stannis. As soon as the king died, he was like, oh, I'm the king now.
He and Renly probably would have teamed up and taken over. Like, didn't Renly try to give Eddard a whole
bunch of... Why would they do that? They didn't in the books.
Yeah, Renly and Stannis were never teaming up to do shit.
Unless Stannis bent the knee to Renly.
Which he's not going to do.
I don't think Renly would have been as bold without all these other people rebelling. I think he would have just served under...
He was the first one.
He was peacing out.
Well, Stannis was the first
Stannis one. Was gone, and he saw it was coming, and Renly's like, hey, you know, you should just support me for this shit. Like, you know, I mean, I think there's a scenario where Renly gives in. But it's not at all the way things went down with John Arryn's death and all that. It just, that's not conducive to Stannis being, you know, it.
Yeah.
Maybe if this was 10 years later or something in John Arryn.
I think we specifically need to do a what if, like, seriously, what if Ned was at the wall? What if Loras was killed by the mountain. Stuff like that. Small things that might actually change the whole narrative completely.
Send a ripple.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting.
Because there's something, I think there's a call to arms already about, you know, doing a what if cast.
Or where are they now or something.
Yeah.
Well, because I think someone's mentioned what if, and I think one of the listeners was like, hey, is anyone doing this? And, like, I want to be on it. So... That's just like a whole long cast of just what you know, half of what we do, I guess, on these is just like, well, what if? But
it would be fun.
So what do we think, just, you know, getting back on topic, What do we think of this chapter and the way the book ends on this chapter? And you're kind of, you're done with the book now. Like, how does that feel versus the normal book? And how do we feel the reread just in general? Like, has it changed your view of things? Have you, like, every time I reread, I notice things, but thinking about the fact that these are, you know, sequential events now has also brought some new perspective.
I would say it feels like it's less magical ending than if Daenerys is the last one. I mean, it feels more like it's a military campaign we're looking forward to in the Clash of Kings, rather than how it ends with Daenerys being. I kind of felt like she was finally living up to some sort of fate or prophecy, something that might be coming.
But at the end of the Bran chapter, isn't it like, I have to do something or I'll die?
What? Bran chapter? At the end of the Bran chapter? The last line of the Bran chapter is, Maester Luwin says, "We will have to find a stone carver who knew his likeness well."
I think it...
Okay. That's me reading the wrong
because Danny keeps saying, if I look back, I'm lost. I have to move forward. You know, that's maybe a combination of those things.
I think maybe if it was like ended with Danny, but then this John chapter was an epilogue chapter, it'd be okay.
It's not as exciting, but you know what? I think that having this chapter after the Danny one. I think a better order than Danny, Bran, John would have been Bran, Danny, John. And, you know, you can call the John chapter an epilogue if you want, because it hones in the theme of, you know, we opened with the others.
Yeah.
And then the last chapter is, hey, John, fuck your brother. Fuck the Game of Thrones. Yeah. Like, we got to go do this others shit up here. Like, remember that from the prologue?
Yeah.
When dead men come hunting in the night. You do think it matters who sits the Iron Throne?
Correct me if I'm wrong here, but to me, it kind of feels like ending on the John chapter is sort of like watching a TV show and like you're waiting till next week, you know, and like this is the they're going out next week. It feels like the ending of an episode of a TV show, which is still pretty good. It still works as the ending of the book. It's satisfying in a way. But ending on the Danny chapter feels like, you know, the ending of an epic movie where you're like, what? Like, it's got the big twist. It's got, you know, like, what is going on? And then you're like, oh, man, it's going to be 2 years till I see the sequel or something. Like,
yeah. I would agree more if Danny had a larger Khalasar, but I kind of feel the same way about Danny's chapter because she only has like 100 people. So it's not like she can hatch the dragons and that's the conclusion to her story. Like, she has to do something else with those dragons. She has to go, you know, get the rest of the Dothraki, or she has to go reclaim the Seven Kingdoms. She has to do something else before she's really got closure.
No, definitely. But you're talking about like an epic movie, like, you know, like Lord of the Rings, and then it cuts out and then it scrolls over and you see like, oh, they did two towers and they still got to finish this journey. And you're like, oh, crap. You know what I mean? It's real big.
So more movie TV than cliffhanger ending. Yeah. I agree.
I liked having John's chapter at the end because it kind of, you know, you see all this amazing magical fantasy type stuff happening with Danny, and then you get pulled back to, hey, shit's still fucked up and we still got to solve it over here. You know, it reminds you that there's more.
Yeah, it's like real human stuff.
Yeah,
I did like whoever it was said the parallel between the epilogue and epilogue. It's not an epilogue. John's chapter and the prologue. I like the bookends like that. Whoever said that was good.
Yeah, wraps it up nice.
How do we feel about the end of Game of Thrones here? Are we excited for Clash of Kings?
Yes.
Yeah.
Of course.
And I assume. Just a note for everyone.
Yeah, I think I'm done. I don't think I'm even going to read the next book.
Oh, well, with no White Raven, no one's going to join us. I don't know what we'll do.
Oh, no. We just lost all of YouTube.
Yeah, we lost those two White Raven fans. But I will say we don't know exactly what we're going to be doing for the next podcast. Well, we do, kind of. But we will most likely be taking a break when Game of Thrones starts. I think we're going to get into Clash of Kings before then. at least a few episodes, and we might put out a couple episodes while Game of Thrones is airing, but that just sort of depends on how everyone wants to do. So I know we're a little backed up right now, but
backed up.
Yeah, we're like ahead of ourselves on. We've got like several of these that haven't been published, I think, at this point. But that's okay. Yeah. You know, it happens. So anyone following at home, you know, keep reading. Come join us on the forums if you want to, you know, get an idea of what's happening, when we're going to cover what next. And
where are the forums, Adam?
The forums? Oh, I'm not going to tell them where the forums are. I've already told them 3 times in other episodes. Maybe you can tell them. Where are they?
They're at, I Google search APOIAF forums, and then they pop right up because they're in my history.
Oh, he's making it complicated.
A lot,
it's the Podcast of Ice and Fire. There we go.
No, it's a Podcast of Ice and Fire, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's the Podcast
of Ice and Fire. .com/forums.
Search for Podcast of Ice and Fire. It'll be there.
Yeah. Pretty much. So there you have it. So I want to thank you guys for joining me, and I want to tell Skype to go to hell, because it needs to burn. I have like 10 recordings that I'm going to have to edit now, and that's it. So.
Perfect.
Like, comment, and subscribe.
No. Rate us on YouTube, on iTunes, though, even if you give us a shitty rating. I don't care. Just rate that shit.
This is a perfect point for me to jump in then. If you don't want to wait a month for episodes, join the forums and you can just get on the call. You just be on the episode if you want to listen. That's the only reason I'm here. I want to listen to these shits a week early.
Because they're on iTunes like way sooner. It's just
are they?
They're not on
even sooner than
iTunes.
Yeah,
they're on iTunes way
sooner. The OK Word, what's it called? The OK Podcast.wordpress.com.
Yeah.
So
do that
stuff.
As of this moment, there are like 3 or 4 episodes that are out on the WordPress that are not out on iTunes or YouTube.
I think they're out on iTunes, no?
WordPress,
I get
notifications when new episodes show up on iTunes, but I know Bina posted on the forums today multiple Black Dahlia 1, Mad Max.
Yeah.
You know,
those will be.
I haven't gotten.
Those will all.
If those
come
are out
the
on
day
YouTube,
after each other kind of.
Yeah.
But that's kind of an.
I think Mad Max is on YouTube, but Black Dahlia would probably be a few days.
Yeah. To make sure, like, comment, subscribe on YouTube. Find us on WordPress, VOK WordPress, or on the Podcast of Ice and Fire forums.
Donate at your local Vassals of Kingsgrave chapter.
Yeah, just find us there.
Give $20 to Patrick if you want to join.
We've got a GoFundMe, a Patreon, a community.
but you could send me a nice mail asking me if you can join. It won't matter at all. But
if you're joining,
he'll appreciate it.
If you're joining because of an episode that you heard and Patrick was in it, please send all fan mail to him.
Yes, please.
Love to know. Yeah.
It's important.
And for now, thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I don't thank anybody.
Thanks, Adam, for hosting and editing this shit show.
I hate you all.
Yeah. Thank you, Adam.
Indeed.
Thank you, Adam.
And the end.
That's called a segue.
Well, screw you.
Was it?
Burns white on the pyre tonight, not a calisar to be seen. In this red waste desolation, am I Khaleesi, am I queen? The fire is raging like this swirling storm inside. Could not walk in even if I fried. I must walk in and let them see. Be the dragon I was always meant to be. Don't turn, don't burn with my Drogo. And now they know. Let it go, let it go. Can't hold it back anymore. Let it go, let it go. No more dreams of that red door. Let the dragon awake as this night meets a day. Let the fire rage on. The heat never bothered me anyway. It's funny how some king's blood makes everything seem small. And the fears that once controlled me, they can't get to me at all. It's time to see what I can do to test the limits and break through. No right, no wrong, no rules for me. I'm free. Let it go, let it go. I will ride on the wind and fly. Let it go, let it go. You'll never see me fry. Here I'll stand till the light of a day. Let the fire rage on. The fire is burning from my hair down to the ground. The flames are spiraling like blazing, braiding all around. And one thought burns right through me like a fiery blast. I'm never looking back. The past is in the past. Let it go, let it go. And I rise at the break of dawn. Let it go, let it go. That timid girl is gone. Here I'll stand in the light of day. Hear the dragon's song. The heat never bothered me anyway. No, my lady, it's too hot.
What's going on with Longclaw? Just maybe one or two linear rereads ago, they were talking about Longclaw and like why didn't the old bear give Longclaw to his sister, one of her daughters?
I remember this discussion.
Yeah. And so when I was first reading this chapter, the first thing that I thought was, so the first line is John is thinking about Longclaw and he thinks, well, surely the old bear is going to find somebody more deserving of Longclaw than me. And I was like, oh, well, maybe like his fucking sister, who's running the show in Bear Island. But then later in the chapter, the old bear tells John that he can't stand Mage. He's like, I actually don't like her. You know,
hoary old snark.
Yeah. So like, if she's a hoary old snark, maybe it's like a personal thing that like he didn't feel like he could give it to her. But then I was thinking about that and I was thinking, wait, who found Longclaw when Jorah didn't take it? When Jorah left Bear Island and left Longclaw behind, who found it? It wouldn't have been the old bear, right? It would have been Mage or somebody else. Yeah. Did they send it to him?
I think that's what we concluded, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
send it to him for safekeeping or something.
Because he didn't really want it, and it seems like they didn't want it, which is weird.
why didn't they want it?
You know what? I just figured it out, guys, and we're gonna find this out in Winds of Winter. It's a cursed blade. That's what it is. Ooh. It's a cursed blade, ooh, and that's why no one wants it. And that's why he gives it to John.
Oh, boy.
I'm happy with that solution.
And John dies wearing it.
Oh, my God. The John hate is so real.
No, I love John, but it does seem like that blade, at least the history that we know of it, is not very good.
Yeah, it just gets shit on constantly. People are like, fuck it, I'll give this to somebody else. John's like, fuck it, I'll leave it at the wall. No one cares about it.
It's another man's sword that he dreams of.
Oh, boy.
Ooh, yeah.
The faction, Betty.
I think it's good of Jorah that he didn't sell it. I mean, it meant that his pride did mean something more than the love for his wife at that point.
That's a good point. If he could have sold it to Tywin Lannister and kept his wife happy for her entire life.
Huh.
I don't know about her entire life. For a couple days, anyway.
Oh. Yeah, she was
fucking
not
fucking Hightowers, man.
Oh. Dude, Tywin had a real serious Valyrian steel man, Woody. He could have sold that shit for Lannisport.
Is it strange, like, some of the houses that we find out have Valyrian steel blades and some of the ones that don't? It's kind of surprising that the Baratheons don't have one. I mean, the Lannisters had one, but it was lost. And then, like, the Mormonts have one? What the fuck? How?
I don't understand is that there are clearly a number of Valyrian steel daggers around, and people trade that shit, and they bet it, and they're not as, like, the ancestral swords, there's a lot tied to them, no one wants to give them up. Tywin could have easily just been like, oh, there's a dagger buying that. Like, he could have bought anything he got, and then got the dude that comes over to melt down ice to just make a fucking sword. He could have done that at any time, if it was really that big of a
deal. The fact that there are any non-swords in existence give Tywin a way to create a sword.
Because he could
be buying up other stuff.
I don't think so, because the sword, I think you can make into two swords because it was made with one spell. But can you take a whole bunch of things that have been made with different spells and make them into one blade?
That's a good point, but I'm going to kind of say, like, that's something George needs to give us evidence for, not the other way around.
Yeah. George doesn't have to give shit.
He hasn't, you know, proved that you can't, all right? that could be a thing. It would take one line of dialogue to be like, all those years he never made a sword of the knives because it couldn't be done. Like, oh, okay.
I mean, it's also a play of power. I mean, he takes Ned's sword, which is an old family blade, and melts it over into separate blades to kind of show that he has won over the Starks.
Well, do you think he wants...
Oh, yeah, when he finally gets
it. An ancient blade because he wants the history? Is that what we're thinking? In which case...
I'm seriously thinking that he... Yes, he wants a Valyrian steel blade, but he essentially wanted the Lannister blade more. I mean, that's why his brothers went out to look for it and stuff like that. I think they wanted the real sword more than they wanted just a regular sword or what, something melted from daggers or whatever. And the only reason he actually made swords, which he didn't actually claim for himself, he gave one to his son and one to his grandson. That was mainly just a show of power that he won over the Stark.
It was
it's a show of power
of House Stark.
He was basically pissing on Ned's grave by doing that.
Yeah,
for sure. Let's see.
And they really did it well in the show, I think.
Oh, that's one of the most beautiful scenes in the show, I think. The opening with the forging.
That scene was great.
Yeah.
The only thing I didn't love about that scene is it was the wolf scabbard. I didn't know what that was until I had to look it up. You know what I mean? It was just like a lighting thing. It was a little weird. It was like, is that the scabbard that Ice was in the pilot?
It was in a bunch of furs in the pilot. It was weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a super nitpicky thing to bring up, but. You know, I was like, what is it? Also, what are these furs? Well, Why is Tywin just going to burn some hair?
We think, like, oh, is that lady in the show? Does he have lady's corpse and he's tossing it on there? What's going on? I think that's part of, we initially saw that episode and we were kind of confused. But
I think it's interesting some of the houses that have Valyrian steel swords and the ones that don't. Even when it's like a subservient house, they have a Valyrian steel sword, even though the main house doesn't.
Just like demand the sword and be like, give me that shit. Like, you know, no one would put up with it.
Some of them that, you know, that makes a lot of sense. Like, you know, the Tarleys of Horn Hill, they have one. You know, they have a tradition of military might. But it strikes me as odd that any of the Ironborn have Valyrian steel swords, particularly because the Greyjoy Rebellion just happened. Like, it seems entirely within Tywin's character to start some shit with them as a pretext to get one of those swords, you know, or to make it a point of his involvement in the Greyjoy Rebellion to capture one of those swords or demand one as, you know, a boon from Robert after the war.
It just seems like he could have been wheeling and dealing his way into a sword earlier than he does in the series.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it really just depends on if he's actually that much into getting the Laerys Steel sword. I mean,
maybe he doesn't care as much as I think.
Maybe he's not that much into getting any Valyrian steel sword, just either the ancestral.
No, he's made offers.
Yeah, he's made offers, but
he's made offers on other swords, and people won't sell them.
Yeah, it sounded like it was like any sword. He would just be like, "Hey, I'll buy that," and people were like, "Nope." We only know about one dagger, but like, there it is mentioned that they're pretty plentiful, like the daggers.
They're valuable. They're valuable. So I mean, if you would.
But it's mentioned there's quite a few of them in existence, like.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be normal for a normal cutthroat to have a Valyrian steel blade.
No, they're ornate and they usually have like gold and, you know, jeweled handles and like, because they are special. But it's also not like, you know, like no one has them.
True.
Okay.
I've been looking through the list of people owning. Valyrian steel blades and that we know of, at least, and it looks like most of them are old houses. Like, yeah, you have Celtigar, and Celtigar has not a Valyrian steel sword, but a Valyrian steel axe,
which is cool. Badass. Somewhere.
It's quite cool.
Oh yeah, and the Mormons. Yeah. Hormones might be poor, but they've been around for a long time, like age of Europe, right?
I mean, there is actually a Ironborn House Horlall has a sword, Nightfall.
The Ironborn have too. The House Drum has Red Rain.
Oh yeah, also yeah.
Oh yeah.
Hmm. I wonder if they got those on their own or if they were taken.
Well, Red Rain was probably stolen.
They stole it.
But is Nightfall stolen, or is it originally a Harlaw sword? I don't think we know.
It was either bought or stolen, right?
Nope, it was stolen.
What? Yeah, there you go. Raiders. Raiders gonna raid.
Iron price. So, I was looking into, like, the human history timeline, and we invented the wheel in 3500 BCE. So that means it's only been like 5,000 years since we invented the wheel.
Yeah.
I mean, this is like a classic fantasy thing, right? Though, like Aragorn rules for, Aragorn's claim to the throne is 3,000 years old. Like it's just such a typical fantasy thing to make history entirely too long.
Yeah, I guess.
It's a trope. Well, but also you have to think of that. I think Sam specifically says that he's kind of disbelieving the fact that the realm is 8,000 years old.
Yeah.
Because
he can count the genealogies of the Lord Commanders.
Yeah, exactly. So he's kind of thinking that it doesn't add up. And if you take that into account with also the fact that the Bronze Age, which is when the first men were there, right? That's the Bronze Age, essentially.
Yeah.
And that's, 4,000 years for us, also? 3,000 years for us? About Bronze Age?
I don't know. It says here that 8 to 9,000 BCE is when beginning of human settlements and agriculture happened. So. Yeah,
the Bronze Age, I think, is right before the Greek Empire, the ancient, you know, Greek and Rome. No, like Greece and Rome started to be big. I thought that's the
Bronze Age.
Rome was like 300.
So like classical civilization.
Yeah, before classical civilization started, that was Bronze Age. And that's about 2,500 or 3,000 years ago. So if you think about that, in taking into account that it might not be 8,000 years, but 4,000 years, then it's not such a big jump, right?
Well, also, in the Americas, like, they didn't have any draft, like, domesticated.
They had the draft
beast
in World War II.
So they didn't use the wheel at all. They didn't. They couldn't.
Who didn't have the wheel?
They used the only wheels that they used were for toys. Otherwise, like, they had no oxen, no horses or anything to draw anything, so they used logs.
Yeah.
So, but at the same time, I just came back from Peru.
Oh,
they built Machu Picchu.
Yeah,
you know, they were able to build these huge things without the wheel.
But, and this is also, I mean, you got these are varied civilizations all over the planet. So, I mean, they develop at different rates. They're not connected, right? So, we could kind of say the same thing here in Westeros is like just saying that, like, for something stunted their growth or something at some point, or. I mean,
it was just fine. I just
how significant was the doom of Valeria to everyone else around it as well? I mean, did that kind of set things back? And so
it might
make sense.
Yeah, might just have prolonged the Middle Ages for them. Essentially, they might not. They might just be like everybody thinks a backwater place. Like Westeros isn't very important in the development of high society, and then. Rome falls or Valeria falls and everything that was supposed to happen, every technological advance that was supposed to happen just didn't.
And, I mean, obviously there's no like Gutenberg because Stannis is having the maesters write out every letter, you know, like there's apparently not that person that advances society.
Yeah, that's part of it too. Is like Reformation or anything like that. You need someone who's going to bring on that Renaissance, who has the ideas, and then someone with money or power needs to try to implement them, and then more people come forward.
Yeah, and then again, you have unless the Citadel actually manages to kill off all dragons and all magic. I mean, there wouldn't be any reason for great societal reformations, because right now there's proof that there are gods that the power behind the gods. So religion is just as potent or even more potent than it has been before. And magic is coming back into the world, so you don't need to develop great weapons to win the weapons race. You can just jump on a dragon. So
be a motivation to try and invent something that helps against the dragons if you happen not to have one, though.
But then again, you have to really make a great jump for it to actually be effective, right? I mean, you have to giant ballistas. I mean, that's might work. I don't know.
Maybe the dragons just didn't last long enough for them to make something to fight them.
Maybe. Yeah.
So, well, I mean, if we're
because they unified
if we're
the kingdom.
About the...
So,
sorry.
So this is all going in the after show.
Well, I don't think the kingdoms lasted long enough to defend against the dragons, right?
No.
Well, except for Dorne, but they didn't fight them; they just avoided.
Yeah. But they just basically came over and, like, laid waste to everyone.
Yeah, but...
So there's never a time where they're like, oh, okay, well, we know this weapon, so we should, you know, make something to fight against it. It was like, all of a sudden, holy shit.
It's like, we have a crossbow, let's make it bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah, like an atom bomb, right? Essentially.
Well, you need an atom bomb sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't defend against it.
Atom bomb.
Wah, wah, wah.
That's called a segue.
Oh, screw
wait,
you.
Was it?
You're
lost. Oh, God.
It's pretty awful.
Yeah. Oh, no, the atom bomb.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, God.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
This is awkward, Khaleesi.
Like, okay. Alright.
So that knife that they found?
Oh boy. Yeah, that's a crazy story there.
Was it a Valyrian steel dagger?
No, this,
with a dragon bone
found,
handle?
This is an aside, I'll cut all this out. But they found a knife on the property, like years after I think it was a folding knife or something, a construction crew when they were demolishing OJ's old house found it. Yeah. And apparently the guy went to a cop next door and, you know, said, "Hey, I found this." There was some guy near the cop, like, you know, I don't know, he was off duty, I think he was on his way home. And instead of reporting it, he just kept it, like, forever. And he retired early this year, and he called them up, and he was trying to get the case number and, like, details on the OJ case because he wanted to frame it and have the case number put there because he just assumed it was the OJ knife all this time. And someone was like, "Let me get back to you on that." And because he told them, like, "I found this, I got this knife, I want to get it framed." And someone was like, "Uh-huh, you need to bring that in here." That is maybe.
And I'm pretty
evidence.
Sure that OJ said something crazy like, "If the knife is rusted, I can't be busted."
Yeah, well,
does the glove fit?
All right, so we'll put that in the OJ Simpson podcast. Anyway,
well, it's only 3 o'clock. So.
3 o'clock.
Oh, that's all right.
No big deal then. What? You're going to bed already? She's getting wasted.
That's like midday.
That's Matt.
Yeah, it's never been this bad before, and we did have a lot of people. Like, if we only had 6, maybe it wouldn't have been so bad. I'm not saying we shouldn't have more people.
No,
I'm just saying maybe it's because of
somebody. I wanted to try to get a big crew in because it's the last one for the
last one
book. And yeah,
no, it was good.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Other than the technical difficulties, I thought we did pretty well.
I blame Patrick and Steve for just tagging along at the end. They probably overloaded it, you know? It's all their fault.
Yeah, you loved us. Yeah. I'm such a jerk. I didn't even confirm that I was going to join until like an hour before the podcast. I'm like, "Oh yes, Adam, I will accept the offer to join last minute. Thank you."
Well, yeah.
Even after I had joined the call and asked about when I should go in the list, I was still not added to the list.
I put you at the end. I just like put you, well, because you weren't in the call and wasn't sure what was going on. And but anyway, we'll just start calling you Steve on the forums, asshole in real life.
Oh God!
Ooh, perfect. No, I like that.
You know I'm kidding. You know. Sound right.
I'm not in it, so I might not listen to it. So.
Well, you know what?
Probably not interesting.
Patrick,
anyway.
I can send you a mirror, and you can look into that while you listen.
That might work. I'm not sure. I'll have to check it out.
That's called a segue.
Screw you.
Was it?
I'm trying not to hear about it. So yeah, I'll just hang up and you can talk about it.
Oh no, I don't have anything interesting to bring up anyway.
Look,
so
now you're driving people away. You're driving people away.
All right then.
One of these days I'm gonna fuck up because when I first mute my mic to make sure it's muted, I pop in and I'm like, fuck. I'm muted, right guys? And nobody ever says that. If I'm ever not muted, it's just gonna, it's a disaster.
Well, we're always too polite to tell you, but actually.
Alright, bye.
Alright, later.
See you later.
Yeah, I gotta go
bye.
Too.
Bye. So.
How the fuck do you hang up on this thing?
Oh, God. Oh.